Now, this is weird. I have done some freaky shit.
Hey, boys, I have a headache.
That makes absolutely no goddamn sense whatsoever.
Movies in the Buff.
Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of Movies in the Buff, where we strip down, objectify, and thoroughly violate Inara Sarah.
Rod, it's supposed to be your favorite movie.
Oh, wait, yeah, your favorite movies. Sorry, I was thinking about Inara Sarah, which I will be for most of this episode. I'm Rod, and I'm pleased to introduce your team of debauchery, lovely Lisa.
I swallowed a bug.
And Carl.
You know, Rod, I'm taking your sister under my protection. If anything happens to her, I swear to you, I'll get very choked up. Honestly, there could be tears.
Why? There wouldn't be from my end. And our very and our very special guest host, Rob Wynn, a.k.a. Autograph Cat.
This landing is going to get pretty interesting.
Interesting.
Oh, God, we're all going to die?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, and in case you haven't already figured this out, we will be buffing Serenity, picking up where the cult show Firefly left off. Writer-director Joss Whedon's tale of galactic unrest follows Malcolm Reynolds, played by Nathan Fillion, captain of the transport ship Serenity, and a scrappy but loyal crew. When the ship picks up two fugitives from a powerful coalition ruling the universe, Mal and his mates find themselves in the center of a cosmic conflict pursued by military forces and space-roaming savages. Starring Nathan Fillion, Summer Glau, Gina Torres, Alan Tudyk, Marina Bakarin.
Basically anybody who ever acted with
Joss Whedon. Jewel State, Sean Mayer. I cannot pronounce that guy's name.
That belonged to you, Rod.
Oh no, you cannot pronounce his name. I don't think it's actually in any language known to man.
I am going
here's something that it's a good thing you brought me on, because I can tell you things you didn't already know, which is that actually, while it is spelled as you see it, it is pronounced Bob Smith.
Is it really?
Nice.
The more you know.
I can't do it. Ron Glass, David Krumholtz, Michael Hitchcock, and directed by God. Sorry, I'm from Joss Whedon.
Those two words are synonymous, aren't they?
Pretty close.
I believe so.
Pretty close. And in case none of you out there know, after the many, many, many times we've made references, the cast of Movies in the Buff are not only brown coats, but we are full-blown Whedonauts.
Yep. Joss Whedon
There's
is God.
Anything else to be?
Oh,
yes, there are people who love Joss Whedon and people who have never seen any of his shows.
Really?
Oh, I don't know any.
I will risk committing a heresy here. I really did not actually enjoy Angel.
Really?
I really didn't. Angel to me was, let's take all of the characters on Buffy that Rob detests and give them their own show. And I know it got better later, but that's how it kind of struck me originally, and I never could get into it as a result.
I can see that.
Yeah, I remember trying to come back to it towards the end when Spike came over. Mm-hmm. And we started watching it, and we were about halfway through some episode that had something to do with a werewolf. I don't remember. And about halfway through it, I turned to my wife and said, "Do you care how this ends exactly?" And she said, "Not really." And we turned it off and we never watched again.
Wow.
So
what episode was that?
Angel Werewolf. And I'm not as good at this as I used to be, but I'm gonna say season 5, episode 12.
No, I wasn't that far in.
Werewolf's name was Nina. She was the he actually ended up having sex with her a lot throughout the show.
It's sad that he can do that.
I am,
with both Buffy and Angel.
Yeah, I'm a big, big Buffy and Angel fan since way back. But it's been a long time since I've, been that boned up on it. No pun intended.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, is that pun going with the fact that he was sleeping with her, or the fact that, she was a wolf?
I'm not even going to touch that. We're doing Serenity.
Oh, right. Right,
that's right.
Serenity Roundtable. Okay, they did something in the beginning of this movie that I hate in all movies. And, in the scripts that I've written, I've found myself doing this because it's just so much easier than picking it up later on. And it's where you explain the entire history behind the movie before it happens. Like right there, mm-hmm, at the beginning, mm-hmm, where you kind of slam it in the face of the audience.
Well, if you remember, though, if you're talking about the voiceover, you know, about EarthOS, if you may not remember this because they didn't reproduce it on the DVDs, but they did that voiceover of sort of every episode of Firefly.
It is reproduced on the Netflix copies of the episodes, though.
Okay.
Yes.
They did that voiceover or something like it. It was not quite that voiceover, but I mean, that was from the TV show. They did that every single episode.
Yeah.
The one that they used in Firefly was actually told, they kept alternating who did it, but it was either, Mal or Shepard, or I think once it was Kaylee. But it's always from the cast's, or from the crew's point of view. This time it was done from the Alliance's point of view. Mm-hmm. And they tied it right in, you know, to the beginning of the movie, which I thought they did really well.
Yeah, the fact that it's not just a gratuitous voiceover, it's actually what this teacher was saying to the class. So you're actually, they kind of brought that in very neatly.
And, you know, speaking of this teacher, being a fan of Bones, it's really weird seeing her in this role.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you watch Bones, she plays like the boss, the head coroner in Bones. It's just really, really strange seeing her because she doesn't look or sound any different. I kept waiting to see her cut into a, you know, rotting corpse.
But, and actually, okay, this has been the discussion of a lot of debate here, but the speaking Chinese, like the intermingling Chinese with, I want to say English, but I'm just going to go with American. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But the intermingling of that and the concept of those two cultures being the ones that survive, and that's why this exists, I liked it. And a lot of people have given a lot of problems to this.
The biggest problem with the Chinese in the TV show, and I haven't actually spoken to the people who I've spoken to about this, is if you actually speak Chinese, what they're saying is largely incomprehensible.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't have a real dialect coach.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, and Chinese is a much more tonal language than English is. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times what they were saying was gibberish to an actual Chinese speaker. They're sitting there, what did he say?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's actually two or three good websites on the internet where people who are Chinese speakers have tried to actually do translations of all the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And in several places, they're like, well, I really don't know what they were saying, but I think it might have been this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that.
And in the movie, almost all of the written Chinese that you see is actually gibberish.
Uh-huh.
Like, there was actually notes in here on IMDb about some of the actual translations to it, and it's just gobbledygook.
Uh-huh. Yeah, although it is worth noting that over the course of 500 years, linguistics drifts.
Exactly.
So, you know, you can make a Watsonian argument that it's actually linguistic drift and that there's not a mispronunciation. It's just that, you know, the language has changed.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Harrison theory on movies.
Mm.
It's not that kind of movie.
Oh, I walked right into that.
You did. You let it happen.
Actually, that's not true. It is that kind of movie. Mm. I mean, this is one of those movies that it started with a basic premise and, you know, just went from there, or at least the show did.
Mm-hmm.
He built this premise and said, now what happens from this point on? And that was, you know, the entire run of the show. Plus, large extent, this movie.
Mm-hmm.
There are things we're going to get into in this movie that, you know, Joss never would have written in had what happened to Firefly not happened to Firefly.
True. Now, just to kind of push on here, I do have to commend Joss Whedon on his personal take of the dream sequence within the dream sequence.
Oh. Yeah, that was well done.
It was. It was very well done.
He went from River's dream to River's reality to, wait, this is actually a hologram.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it did answer one question, which I really, really missed not being able to see in Firefly. And that was what Simon actually saw when he took her out.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, going through that whole show that he saw things he really couldn't forget.
I'm not sure that that's not a retcon, though, because when he actually figured out what they'd been doing to her in the episode Ariel when he got her to the medical imager, mm-hmm. he was very surprised what they had actually done, which doesn't suggest to me that he had actually been in the facility and seen what they were doing and spoken to the people who were running the program.
Yeah, I think that is retcon, because he said that he got River from the people who helped get her out. She was already in stasis by the time when she was delivered to him.
Right.
Now, going back to the actual character breakdown, to me, this was just a little unbelievable, and maybe I'm pulling biasness from the show, but Simon being this confident in such a subterfuge as what he's doing here just didn't feel right at all.
There's a lot of things. Okay,
yeah.
Here's my biggest beef with Serenity, and I mentioned this before. Serenity is an attempt to pack possibly years worth of storyline into a 2-hour film.
Yeah.
And to do that, they had to do a lot of things. They had to streamline a lot of things, but worse, and this is the thing that really, really bothered me when I saw it the first time and when I rewatched it, is they had to reset a lot of relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole evolution of relationships that had been going on in the TV series that, you know, would be hard to explain in the setup to a movie. So basically, you have to take Jane back to completely mercenary pre-Ariel. The relationship between the respect that had grown between Mal and Simon is gone.
Mm-hmm.
The progress that River had made towards actually integrating herself with the crew that we saw at the end of Objects in Space is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stuff where they basically kind of like moved the whole relationship meter back.
Well, and also you have to remember.
Mistaken?
Go ahead, Lisa.
Am I mistaken that they kept Kaylee pretty much the same though?
Give or take. There were a few things.
She was a little more, some of the stuff that they kind of subtexted in the series was a little more text. You know, like her incredibly high sex drive, you know, which, you know, was always hinted at a lot in the series, but because of it was network television.
If you remember correctly, they hinted at it in the movie, too.
Oh, no, it was
they didn't hint
at it. She said very boldly.
Yeah, exactly.
I ain't had nothing between my legs that it weren't run on batteries.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. The subtext became text in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but I don't know. It's... Go ahead, Carl.
Well, I was going to say, you know, her incredibly high sex drive wasn't so much subtextual in Firefly. I mean, the very first time Mal meets her, she's fucking his chief engineer.
That's
in
true.
The room.
I saw that when I was on my back before.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
However, her whole attachment to Simon is reset.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of. Yeah, I mean, that had not had a chance yet to start going anywhere, but everybody knew about it in Firefly.
Oh, sure. Remember in Janestown.
Yeah. Exactly.
Go away. Things are going well.
All I can say about Kaylee's character is, you know, why do we have an entire 2-hour movie without Kaylee wrapping her lips around some kind of fruit?
That's a good question.
I mean, who does this? Anyway, I'm sorry. Jewel State is gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. I'm right with you on that. She captured my... You know, the first time I actually watched Firefly when it was broadcast. I was one of the people who watched it from episode one because I read an article in a magazine that said, oh, there's this new... You know, here's the new fall series. And they went, oh, the guy from... You know, did Buffy the Vampire Slayer is going to do this space western. And I went, okay, I'm there.
Yeah.
And the first time you see... Kaylee is when she pushes herself out from under that panel and, you know, boom, she's the engineer. And I was like, oh, I'm in love.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't stopped being in love. So,
but I
can't argue with you either.
I think every person every person on this podcast right now could sit and watch Jewel State eat strawberries for hours.
Mm, absolutely.
Peach. I could eat a peach absolutely. For hours. Oh, wait, wrong movie.
Wrong movie.
Anyway, my last complaint about this entire scene is, you know, the guy shoots the glass and it doesn't even crack, but yet pistol whipping it works.
I don't think I ever saw him shoot it.
Yeah, he shot.
Yes, he did.
Oh, I remember shooting. I just didn't remember it hitting the glass. I thought it...
You can see it ricochet off the glass.
That was the first time Simon Flint.
Weird.
Yeah, but yeah, pistol whipping the glass cracks it. Because mm-hmm. that makes yeah. sense. That was major.
That's a well-known concern. Principle of physics.
Yeah, okay. And it's a hologram.
Yep.
You have the introduction of the operative, possibly one of my favorite villains of all time. He has got to be, at very least, the most methodical I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Well, they cover why later.
Well, kind of. But even your most devout villains and their beliefs are not generally this methodical or well thought out. And this is more of a testament to Joss's writing ability and his ability to create amazing characters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think part of that
methodicism?
Being methodical. Yeah, that
there
one.
You go. Nemesis.
I think part of that has to do with the fact you have to be intelligent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he was intelligent.
I've got two things to say about the operative overall. Mm-hmm. And one of them is, I love listening to this man talk.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I can listen to this guy read the phone book, pretty much. But the other thing is that if you watch all of Firefly and then watch Serenity, which is what I usually do,
mm-hmm.
I have a hard time realizing that this is not the bounty hunter from...
Yeah,
he
did go really...
What is that? Which episode is that? Is that Objects,
Objects in Space? That was a little early.
Yeah.
One of the non-aired episodes.
Yeah, and they look
it was
so
the
similar.
Last aired episode.
Yeah, they look so similar, though, that it's really hard for me to forget that it's not early.
No, really, if you see them like back-to-back, it's fairly easy because Jubal Early is a lot thinner than the operative is. But, Objects in Space was actually the final aired episode.
See,
they skipped over 3 to get to it because they knew they were getting canceled.
Yeah.
And they wanted that one out on the air.
See, I was under the impression that the actual closing scene was not Objects in Space. It was the body. And
never broadcast.
See, I was under the impression that that was the actual last episode for some reason.
Well, actually, the last aired episode was the 2-part pilot.
True. Because they aired that out of sequence.
They aired everything out of sequence. And we're not going to get into the Fox does not ever need to touch science fiction ever again. Or anything Joss Whedon has his name on.
Yeah, see, Rod's rants is later.
Exactly.
Yeah. Although, you know, Tim Minear actually, after Firefly and then after Wonderfalls got canceled and then after another show he did, and he said... someone interviewed him and they said, you know, how do you feel about, you know, the fact that you keep getting canceled after half a season? And he said, well, you have to remember, I'm not doing this with my money. I'm doing this with other people's money. So if they want to keep giving me money to keep, you know, being basically an American version of the BBC and doing little short run series, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be nice to have a hit, but I'd rather do quality than run for 5 years.
Yeah. Okay. So who else, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm just trying to keep the round table moving there. Who else loves the sword symbolism? You know,
that was actually well done.
Part? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was well done.
Or just the fact of the sword being a symbol for the operative.
Sure.
Being his choice of weapon.
Yeah.
And if you remember in earlier Firefly episodes again, that Mal's not very good with a sword.
No. Not chopping wood.
I want to know something. What is a primary buffer panel?
It's a thing that falls off and it's not supposed to.
Oh, okay.
For no apparent reason.
Right.
Something just fall off my Goram ship for no apparent reason?
No, I just love the fact that, you know, we're covering this on Movies in the Buff, and one of the first things that you see Serenity do is lose their primary buffer panel.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
I like it.
Apparently it's something that helps with their entry sequence.
Yeah, they're going to have to fall back to their secondary. I like that. Define entry.
Because, you know, everything on Serenity's got a backup system, sure.
It's called Kalian Wash.
Well, and I love the whole, you told me that would hold for 2 weeks. That was 6 months ago.
Okay, that's a perfect example of Mal and Kaylee's interaction, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Not only that, just for the record, that is I forget the name of the part, but I went back and looked this up. It's the exact same part that in the episode Serenity, the 2-part pilot, Kaylee was saying she wanted to get a new one.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I remember that.
And who else loves the fact that all through the TV series, and they actually got a new one of these for the movie, but there is a part that looks kind of like a weird, oddly shaped hammer that you see prominently in the episode Out of Gas that shows up in like every episode and this movie somewhere randomly. Does anyone know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. The
kind of, yeah. Oh, yeah, I do. The one that he's trying to replace.
And I can, yeah. Gas. That shows up in every episode of Firefly and the movie, Serenity. Hmm. I love
Weird.
It. Then you have Jane's introduction, which personally Jane is my favorite character, or you know, non-female.
He would be.
Yeah, he would be. If we were casting Serenity again, we would put Rod in the place of Jane. So that would go without saying.
I'm the big Frenchman. Okay.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. Anyway, my next note was there's a lot of food on that table.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I'm being a strickler again, aren't I? I do love the way this scene works, and the fact that they had to completely rebuild Serenity from the ground up for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they still were able to make it so accurate to the TV show that they could take the camera and walk it through the ship was awesome. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that was something that was a big deal when they made the TV series, is that the whole set actually did exist. It was in two parts, but, you know, they wanted the feel that you could walk through the ship, and it was a real place.
Yeah.
Because Serenity is, in many ways, you know, a character in its own right.
Yeah, that was an entire thing in the box set.
And she's even got her own lines.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Only Kaylee can hear them half the time, but she's got her own lines.
Okay, so then you have the argument between the Doctor and Mal about
argument number one.
Yeah, argument number one. Do you know what?
I imagine if it was fear, my eyes would be wider.
Mm-hmm.
We'll look for that next time.
And then I'm going for a ride.
And that's the other thing about this whole opening sequence on Serenity is all of the great fuel for all the great one-liners he packed into this scene. It's like one on top of the next, on top of the next.
Yes.
River's one-liner was perfectly well delivered in that one scene. Do you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, the point to that line, and this was covered in an interview with Joss Whedon, that they were putting so much emphasis on River in these opening scenes. And the story put so much emphasis on River, he wanted to have River hand the story back to Mal.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay. Yeah.
And that when he says, "Do you know your part in this?" and she says, "Do you?"
Mm-hmm.
That's her handing the story back over to him as the main character.
Right. Yeah. I can see that. Because, you know, a lot of what Firefly ended up being was River Tam's arc.
Mm-hmm.
But the larger story that was being told was Mal's arc.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, one other thing I actually commented to my wife as I was rewatching the film, I said, you know, I'm just trying to imagine someone watching this film who had never seen Firefly.
Mm-hmm.
Make of it? Because it's almost impossible, as we have proven just now, to discuss this film out of context of the series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to think about that before we, you know, started doing our pre-show. And I can't decide if, you know, somebody who did not watch Firefly would either be, you know, would either, you know, like it or just be mildly entertained by it or wouldn't get it. I can't tell.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure.
It depends on what they like.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Sure. I'm not entirely certain that anyone who didn't like Firefly did see it, but that's beside the point.
Yeah.
See, I actually did. I saw this movie. I had kind of heard of Firefly as Joss Whedon's project. I know this is really weird, but and I kind of knew who the actors were, so I kind of knew that they were in this movie. But I had never seen an episode when I watched this movie the first time.
Okay. Do you recall how it came to you? How you took it in?
See, there were things that were kind of confusing. Like, here in a minute we're going to get into this scene, but the first scene of the Reavers, like, their reaction to the Reavers when she calls it in and everybody gets real freaked out and everything, I was like, okay, so these are the villains, or was the Alliance? Who's the villain here? You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were times like that, but overall, I took the movie in really, really well. It's just there were things that were kind of like, okay, so what's going on here? I don't know enough about this story.
Yeah, and the film is really good at foreshadowing and setting things up early and then knocking them down. It really does tend to observe Chekhov's law very well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll show you things, and then later they'll, you know, actually bring those into use. So,
yeah. And for those who don't know, Chekhov's law is the one about showing the gun, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. If you show a gun in the first act, you must fire it by the third act.
Yeah.
But well,
thank you. I didn't know that law.
Well, there you go.
And
this is named, by the way, after the playwright Anton Chekhov, not the ensign Chekhov from Star Trek.
and as far as your comment about nobody who didn't watch Firefly ever watching this movie, I will point out that this movie actually lost a little over $1 million. So yeah, there could be some truth to that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when it first came out, you know, I remember someone making the point that, you know, fans of science fiction had always been saying, if only someone would make a show, you know, just for fans, you know, the rabid fans, they would turn out and really make that a blockbuster hit. You know, just think how much money they're leaving on the table by not catering to this audience. Well, it turns out the amount of money they were leaving on the table is approximately $10 million.
Yeah. Well, the problem is, and I remember this very clearly, when that movie came out, we had just started the economic fall that we're in.
No. What was this? No. This is before that. This was 2005. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but I was already in it.
The really weird.
Well, you know, Ronald Reagan once said that a recession was when your neighbor lost their job, and a depression was when you lost yours.
Exactly.
So, but you know, the economy
was a waitress. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, the problem with Firefly is that, you know, it ran at the very right when you know, TiVos were starting to become popular, and but the Nielsen ratings weren't taking TiVo into account yet, so they weren't actually getting a good idea of the show's ratings. And I think Fox has actually gone on record as saying that was that had that, you know, been factored in, the show would not have been canceled.
And that sucks. You know, that's actually Firefly was the last TV show that I watched religiously before I got a TiVo.
Mm-hmm.
If you called me on Friday night at 8 o'clock, I was not answering the phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't ask me to go anywhere. I was glued to my chair, and I actually missed one episode because I had surgery on a Friday, and I missed the episode Safe. And I remember not actually seeing that until sometime later because I was still in recovery when it was on. And I remember being in the recovery room and trying to watch it, but I was still kind of under the effect of the drugs and wasn't really tracking it very well. According to BoxOfficeMojo.com, the movie ultimately made $25 million, but it cost, I think, $40 to make. Yeah. And worldwide, it almost made its money back.
Yeah, that's what IMDb's got, is worldwide 38.8 million.
Yep.
But I've got to ask, for somebody who watched Firefly all the way through while it was on the air, how difficult was it made for following the storyline by the fact that they were airing everything out of order?
Not terribly. Okay. The episodes that they showed out of order, they showed the episodes in order that needed to be, with the exception of the original pilot. So, for instance, you know, the train job is the second pilot, essentially. Mm-hmm. That was the first episode we saw. And then, you know, they started jiggering some things out of order. But, for instance, Shindig and Safe were shown consecutively. And since one leads into the other, that was important. And then by the time you got to Out of Gas, Aerial, War Stories, those were shown consecutively. So that, you know, they set nicely up the unfolding storyline there.
Oh, good.
So really, the episodes that they kind of shuffled around were ones like Our Mrs. Reynolds and trying to remember Bushwhack.
Ones that were nice to see, but
they didn't need to be in a particular order.
Right.
So it was okay. I mean, the order that they were intended is probably a better order, but I don't think it really janked up the following of the story. What janked up the following of the story was the fact that it was preempted for baseball every week.
Oh.
For several weeks. You know, it was like the playoffs were happening, and Fox had the playoffs, and they would preempt it, you know, all over the place. So mm-hmm. I think there were 2 or 3 weeks where it didn't even air. And yes. It was early on when, you know, you're still trying to build that original audience, and they didn't market it well. Really, Fox fell down so many places on this.
Yeah, which they tend to do.
Fox does, yeah. Then after that, we've got the robbery and chase scene.
I need to see your identification code.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I had a gun sound right now. In fact, I might actually cut a gun sound into that just for the sake of it.
Okay. At last, we can give up this life of crime.
That was mine. I was going to do that one. The leg's a good place. No vital organs. You won't bleed to death.
You know the definition of a hero is?
Someone to get someone else
killed.
You can look it up later. Okay, then you have the chase scene, which, okay, they killed a guy, yada yada, I get why he did it, I'm 100% behind Mal, but then again, I'm an inch justifies the means kind of person. Then you have Jane is trying to find the clips to his gun. Now, at the beginning of this chase scene, Jane says, clips are in the hatch. And then closes the hatch.
I think that that may be, again, here's one where you can kind of say, was that a goof or can we make a plausible storyline? The Reavers completely freaked Jane out.
Oh, yeah.
This is established in his character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going where the Reavers were. You know, mm-hmm. he won't even go on the ship the Reavers had been on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In Bushwhacked. So, I mean, Reavers really, really freak Jane out. So it's plausible that he would forget something as fundamental as where's my ammo.
Yeah. Which, again, is something that's fundamental to Jane's character.
Mm-hmm. Being where he put his ammo. Him being freaked out by Reavers is also explained after the chase scene when everybody's safe and on board Serenity.
Yeah, and they have to go back and reestablish it for the movie because not everybody's seen it. Yeah. But I do have to admit that I find it interesting that Jane is freaked out by the only people in the world more bloodthirsty than he can be at times.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And back into the scene, the visuals on this was amazing, and I forget where they recorded this at, or where they filmed this at. It was somewhere in the Mesa, if I'm not mistaken.
It seems right. It looks right for that for that area.
Mojave
of the
or some area
well,
like
where
that.
Where else would you go to film a Western?
Exactly.
True that.
You know.
But the Barn Swallow scene was just some of the best photography I've ever seen.
But you gotta love what her reply is. Talking ain't doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to have to reserve the best cinematography for later on in this movie, though.
Yeah.
As impressive as those visual effects were, the Rivers fight scene is much better photography.
Cinematography. What I'm going with is actual stills.
Yeah.
When I say photography, I'm talking about actual stills. And throughout this movie, I could not pick a favorite. Like, the stills in this movie are amazing. Perfect angles, perfect coloration, you know, expressed everything that the director of photography was supposed to express throughout this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But you have your Barn Swallow, you have the Pulp Fiction scene. Does anybody know what I'm talking about there?
No.
Reaver jumps up and everybody starts shooting guns at the same time.
Oh.
It's the Pulp Fiction scene. But then you have the argument where Simon punches Mal, which, by the way, Simon does not have that much balls.
Again, it's a character adjustment for the sake of the movie.
Actually, I think he probably would have gotten that much balls if the show had been allowed to go on.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, we've changed Simon's character slightly because we've actually put him in the, you know, he's actually seen what has been done to River.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had to change his character slightly.
True. Yeah, I'm not entirely certain that they're for the better. I mean, he's got this whole, you know, my name is Tam, Simon Tam. And it doesn't really, it's... in some places, it feels like they took the things I really liked about those characters and just sort of threw them aside. You know, you know, one of the things I like about Simon is that he is fundamentally a doctor.
Uh-huh.
And he's fundamentally a guy who is, you know...
awkward.
He's a little... Well, he's from a social class that isn't used to trading at this level.
Uh-huh.
You know? So...
He took that Hippocratic Oath very seriously.
Sure. Yeah, he did that too. But you're right. He is from the, you know, the Alliance is 1%, which
sure,
and you know the Alliance is the 1% for the rest of the universe. So,
And but then you have, you know, remembering Inara and what's been going wrong with Mal, and you know, which was kind of a pointless.
My first clue.
Well, the whole thing was kind of a pointless thing to me. They did not. Fulfill the necessary story girth to the Inara Mal relationship in order to put these scenes in there like this.
Yeah.
You know what
this
I mean?
This is another case where we have such massive compression.
Exactly.
Because, you know, even if we want to accept that this is where the River Tam story was going to ultimately end up, it was originally intended to be the end of season two when we discovered the Miranda planet, and probably midway to season three before we got through the, you know, actual resolution of this storyline. So, you know, we're taking... what, 20, 30, probably about 30 hours of television and compressing it down into a 2-hour film. A 90-minute film.
And the whole Mal and Inara thing is, it was impossible. It would have been impossible for them to get this storyline in there. So it's there simply for the Firefly fans who already know what's going on with these two and have a good idea of how things ended up the way they are right now.
Yeah, okay.
Right. And you can draw a straight line from the way that the Malinar relationship was developing in the TV series to where the movie starts. I mean, you can draw that line fairly easily.
Yeah, that you can make up the story in your head and be pretty close.
Yeah.
But then you have the nightclub and the smack in the face that Kaylee has a thing for Simon.
Yes.
It really was. I mean, it was just a boom, it's there, let's move on. And but I like the Fanti and Mingo characters as the trashy businessmen type, although I really, really wish they would have brought Badger back for this one.
Yeah, I kind of do, too.
Yeah, I do.
I'm wondering if Mark Shepard just wasn't available.
Well, he was doing, at the time, he was doing Supernatural and Leverage at the time. No, he wasn't doing Leverage yet, but he was signing for Supernatural, if I'm not mistaken.
Supernatural.
Yeah, and I think this was the year that he was really heavy in Supernatural, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he may just not have been available to do the project.
Yeah.
I wish that they had given them a different accent because they sounded very Badger-esque.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
They were twin Badger is what they were.
Sure.
Yeah.
But
they were there because, you know, Mark Shepard wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And, you know, for any Firefly fan, you know, Badger should have been there, and I agree. Yeah. I wish he had been.
And I just want to take a moment to say that Mark Shepard is an amazing actor that I want to see in as many things as possible in the coming years. I love him.
Although it's very disconcerting every time he shows up in something that isn't Firefly, because Firefly's where I saw him first. First really became aware of him. And so every time he shows up, we go, oh, it's Badger, which was really, really disconcerting when he showed up in Doctor Who.
See, I haven't seen Doctor Who yet.
Wow.
And
there was one I saw recently that he was in. I pointed him out to you, Carl. Do you remember the show I was watching?
No. And I also have to go back and correct us, because he was not doing Supernatural yet. Supernatural didn't start for another 4 years.
Oh, okay. Oh. Fair enough.
Supernatural didn't start till 2009. He was, however, let's see...
He this didn't was appear 2005.
He was, let's see, 2004, he was working on two different movies, Unstoppable and Evil Eyes, neither of which I've ever heard of. Mm-mm. And then, he did an episode of Monk and CSI New York in 2005. So, yeah, I think he'd have been better served by being on Serenity.
I think so, yeah. But anyway, then you have...
Yeah, but you can never know those things. Yeah. Mark Hamill was in a TV pilot that got picked up, and he turned down the chance to do the series to go do a two-bit sci-fi flick with the guy who did American Graffiti. Everyone said he was committing career suicide.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
Oh.
Whatever happened to him?
Yeah.
For the record...
At this point, no one knows.
Yeah, for the record, Unstoppable was a Wesley Snipes movie. So,
yeah,
I guess he thought he was doing something better.
But okay, so he got screwed by twins, and not in a good way. And then we have the bar fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was an awesome, awesome fight scene.
Yeah, I just have this referred to as River's tussle.
Well, and you know, here's
and then she falls asleep at the end of it.
Uh-huh.
I think that would wear me out too, but okay.
One of the things, and this may have been where he was going with it, but you never got a hint in Firefly that River was capable of this kind of physical violence.
You know, she could shoot for shit, but
right. But you know, you never really did, and so
yeah.
It was kind of a little off-putting at first. I mean, I see where they're going with it, and again, you have to compress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so, and probably would have had more hints if they'd been allowed to do a second.
Yes.
Season.
Yeah.
Just for the record, I have this in my notes as Jane's castration.
Oh yeah.
But
can we go over the part again where Jane gets knocked out by a 90-pound girl? Because that never gets old.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a statement.
I was going to say something. I've completely lost it. You know, surprisingly, and this is just a little side note here, I went back and looked this up. I had always thought that Adam Baldwin was one of the Baldwin brothers. He is,
and he's not.
Not
related at all.
But although an amazing action star, I've liked him since Full Metal Jacket, and that was before I was born. So,
oh God, I feel old.
I am the youngest person in this show, to be honest.
Yeah, but, he is. Although Rob is actually, I think, the oldest person on this show. So,
I was in high school when Full Metal Jacket came out.
You know, all I can say is we're buffing at all ages. But
yeah, there we go. You know, I always my ambition in life was always to grow up to be a dirty old man, and then I thought, why wait?
Anyway, then you know, you find out, where am I at? Oh, Jane gets knocked out. You get the safe word. You get the argument. There's a lot of arguments going on between Simon and Mal throughout this movie.
There's a lot of arguments going on between the entire crew in this movie.
But then you meet Mr. Universe, who is possibly my least favorite Whedon-written character ever.
Oh, no. Wait, before this, before you get into your Mr. Universe spiel, we get the operative seeing the fight.
Oh, right.
He starts going through Mal's history, and we get the biggest continuity goof ever to appear in a Firefly or Serenity flick, and that is where they accidentally say that Mal was a captain in the independent army.
That's right. He was not. He was a sergeant.
He was a sergeant.
And he makes that point in Bushwhacked when he's being interrogated by the Alliance, and they, you know, he refers to him as Sergeant Reynolds, and he says it's captain now.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the only man to lose a war and get a promotion.
Right.
I think that statement is actually made at some point in Firefly.
That's possible.
You're starting a war. You cannot win. I'm known for that.
Yeah.
Who else? Okay.
We're getting ahead of ourselves.
No, I was looking at the Odie Bar commercial, and there's a lot of notes about the Odie Bar commercial throughout several websites. My only thought when I saw this, and from almost the beginning, I thought, this seems like something I would see on Chobits.
No. Thought when I first saw this, and even when I saw it this time, is, wow, they gave the Powerpuff Girls a commercial.
The thing that got me is that And this is another place where, you know, the weird cultural amalgamation that the Firefly universe is. Mm-hmm. But when I see that commercial, what pings in my head is not Chinese, it's Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
It feels very Japanese.
It does.
Oh, it does.
And I don't know.
Which is okay.
But, yeah, that's, you know, fine.
It just sort of, it doesn't quite fit the rest of the thing that they're trying to go for.
But, you know, and, you know, not only does it feel Japanese, but it also, if you think about it, feels very Korean.
Mm-hmm. South Korean.
You know, like, yeah, South Korean. The good mm-hmm. Korean, as I heard it referred to earlier this morning.
I like that.
It's
always better in the South.
Now, there's an email from that Scott and Brian read on yesterday's morning stream while I was listening to it today. It's like, from South Korea, the good Korea.
Right.
But then my next note on this is a river of melancholy. Nothing.
I'm just not even
pull it
gonna...
in the brain pan. Squish!
I have a new ringtone.
You always have at least one.
I know. Every episode I get a ringtone from Lisa. But yeah.
Lisa does the best river since Summer Glau. I will have to say that.
I agree. Anyway, and you get the reason I called it a river of melancholy. She really pours on this crazy, depressed girl bipolarism that kind of reminded me of several members of my family.
Or any TV show on the CW.
Yeah, well, no, because this was actually done well.
Oh, put him boom.
Burn.
But she did. She did this really, really well. She was completely psychotic. But, you know, not in a I'll cut your balls off kind of way. More of a...
Kill me now.
I'm trying to think of something that doesn't involve, like, Nicole Richie or Lindsay Lohan. But...
Yeah, good luck with that.
But, anyway, so she shows them where Haven is. Wait, that's not here.
No, she doesn't show them where Haven is.
No, first they go to the shepherd.
Yeah, which is Haven.
Right. Yeah, that's right. I'm thinking of Miranda. Yeah, they go to Haven and the shepherd. And...
Although this is the first time that she mentions Miranda.
Mm. No, the fight scene was where she
Mentions it to Simon. She says, Miranda, ask her. Mm-hmm. But that's their introduction to Miranda. And go meet Shep, and the operative goes to see Inara.
Yeah,
all at the same time.
That's something I did want to point out here.
My note on that was, gotta love Book.
Well, and here's
Shepherd's
here's the
Book is great.
Well, and here's one of the things that I really love here, because they knew they were never going to really get to explore that storyline.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you right now, without a moment of doubt, Shepherd Book was an operative.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they almost hit you over the head with it. But and I love the line where, you know, you know an awful lot about this. I wasn't born a shepherd. You're going to have to tell me about that. No, I won't.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
And it's a thing that pops up all the time occasionally in Firefly that Shepard was not always a shepherd, and that he's a shepherd for a very good reason. Mm-hmm. And they don't get to explore it. Although I did hear recently, although I haven't had a chance to read them yet, that the Firefly comic series is currently or just finished going over and doing Shepard's history.
Oh, I've got to
really?
See that.
Really?
Yeah.
Because Book was one of my favorite characters in the series because of the whole dichotomy and the what's going on with this guy. Where did he come from? He has high-level Alliance clearance, you know, which got him taken on board an Alliance ship for hospital treatment when they were basically going to say, well, sorry, he's going to die, until they saw his ID. He's clearly has advanced weapons training. You know, he is far, far more capable of violence than you would expect a priest to be. So, you know, I've always been fascinated.
I can give you a very good example of the weapons training. I don't remember the name of the episode, but they go to rescue Mal and Wash. And at the end, and toward the end of that gunfight scene, Simon says, I don't think I've ever shot a man. And Book says, I was there, son. I don't think you have yet.
Yes.
Yeah. I do want to step back for just a second here to the river conversation with Simon. And even further back into the heist scene, you see this look on River's face when she's pointing at the hero guy, and you know, it's always like, really? And you also see it here where Simon says, am I talking to Miranda? And she has this look like, are you really? Did you really just say that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Where she sort of like scrunches her nose up. And,
yeah. And for Summer Glau, this is Allison Hannigan's crying scene. No one does this look better.
No.
You know what I mean?
She has this greatest you are an idiot look.
Yeah, exactly.
And she still has that if you see her in the cape. She has not outgrown that, fortunately.
See, I still have to watch that one. And I don't know. I truly would love to see some old video or something of her back when she was, you know, prima ballerina prior to Joss's discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Just to see if her attitude actually comes out in her dance the way it does in her acting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But anyway, continue on, Shepherd Book.
I
was enjoying this conversation.
I have a problem. I actually will come out on record and say I have a problem with what they did with Shepherd.
And, Thank you.
I agree that they had to do this because they were never going to be able to explore his character.
Mm-hmm.
But this seems like it's not one of those things like Mal and Inara, where you can draw a straight line between where we ended in Firefly and where we are now. This seems like it didn't, you know, you can't figure out what happened to get Shepard off the ship.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, Shepard was always a passenger and he was going where he felt he was needed.
That's true.
So, you know, I could see him deciding that, you know, starting this community was where his calling was taking him. Mm-hmm. I can get there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really what was important...
It just takes a crooked line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what was really kind of important was getting the passengers off the ship to give them a reason to not be there,
right,
so that they could then be used as leverage. I mean, there's dramatic structure reasons why you want these characters to be away from Serenity and have to be returned to Serenity.
Right.
See, and I just can't get there the way that you did. Personally, with Shepard, after the, you know, two-part pilot episode, he was not necessarily a passenger anymore. It's made several references to the point in which he was doing chores, in which he was aiding Simon with his duties in order to pay for his passage. At the same time, and the main reason I say this is because, and I was explaining this to my sister, you had a very family-type hierarchy on Firefly where, you know, Mal and Inara would be looked at as father and mother. They argued with each other. They made the decisions. But Shepard himself would be more of the grandfather figure who actually overlooked everything. And I honestly believe, and this is kind of the symbolism that I pulled from this movie, was that, you know, once Shepard was no longer needed on the ship, he would no longer be needed in life. Does that make sense?
I can agree with Rob that, you know, I see him, you know, seeing that this was something that was needed there, that he needed to do.
Dramatically,
but
yes.
But throughout Firefly, he felt he was needed on the ship. So I can see, you know, something coming up, you know, whatever it was in between the two, where he felt he was needed more somewhere else. Uh-huh. I just still felt like he was still needed on the ship.
Well, we also don't actually know how the leaving of Inara went down.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
true.
There could be related to Book's decision to leave as well.
That's entirely possible, too.
Another thing we don't really know is how much time was in between the last episode of the show and the movie.
Six months.
Was it 6 months?
That's what is coming.
Now,
honestly,
that was 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So it's actually established. I think that's actually a little too short a period of time to set this personally.
I agree.
There's a set time period for two occurrences between Firefly and Serenity, but it's one of my trivia questions, so I'm not going to tell you the answer now.
Oh, got it.
But there actually isn't a set time period, I don't believe, between the end of Firefly's episodes and the Serenity movie, but there is for another point in time.
Yeah, but it's set roughly 6 months after Objects in Space, according to Joss. Mm-hmm. So,
well, fair enough. Well, then after that, though, you have the scene of, you know, let's go get Inara. And all I have to say is there is something that is said in this movie that reminded me of a lot of exes that I've had in my life, where he says, did you see his fight? No. Trap.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that gives the audience who doesn't know the story between Mal and Inara, it gives them enough to where they get an idea of what was going on before.
That makes sense.
You think it was a trap? It's definitely a trap. Yeah. We going in? Yes, yeah, a couple hours here. Did we miss the part where it's a trap?
That's pure Wash.
Oh, yeah. I love Wash. Like, I love Alan Tudyk. I want to see so much more with him in it. And I just recently watched Tucker and Dale versus Evil, and I can't wait to do that one. Because I was convinced that I was going to hate this until I found out Alan Tudyk was in it.
Sure. Alan Tudyk is wonderful.
Oh, he is.
And fun story. My friend Aaron was at Dragon Con a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was shortly after his son had been born. So he's sitting, you know, watching people go by and his son sitting in his stroller. And someone kneels down and starts going, oh, aren't you adorable? To the baby. And Aaron's not paying close attention to this. And someone walks up behind that guy and says, you better keep an eye on him. He's going to steal that baby. And he looked up, and it was Alan Tudyk and Nathan Fillion. And Alan Tudyk was the one cooing over his one-year-old son.
Nice.
Nice.
Actually, currently, Alan Tudyk is doing a Broadway play.
Yeah, I knew that.
Which Nathan Fillion actually got to go see a couple of days ago. I saw it on Twitter. Uh-huh. And apparently he's doing really well. I don't know what the play is, though. I missed that part.
And if any of y'all ever get a chance to go back and watch the British version of Death at a Funeral, do it. Alan Tudyk is hilarious.
Okay.
But, okay, after that you have Mal versus Operative. Round one.
Yes, and I just got to point out, okay, we had one of these last movie when we did Punisher. This is why you aim for the head.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Although I have to admit, I did like Mal's reaction. You know, not waiting, not even taking time to breathe. Mm-hmm. I'm not armed. Good.
Yeah.
Aim for the head, Mal.
Yeah.
Well, if you remember, you know, there's actually an echo to the pilot of the TV series when you've got the federal agent who's there and he's holding River. At gunpoint. And I swear, if one more person moves, and Mal just sort of walks in, shoots him,
mm-hmm.
you know, without saying anything. You know, yeah. It's just, that's
Mal
just
is
how
just
he
a
rolls.
Badass. Yeah. Uh-huh. He really is.
But this scene brings us to another great one-liner. Hmm. And that's not incense.
Yeah.
Right.
And that brings me back to a point of, you know, the villain is not a villain.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
He's not evil. He's devout, but he's not evil.
No, he says he is. He says, what I do is evil, but it must be done.
Yeah.
And he freely admits he's a monster, which
sure.
is unusual in your villains.
Yeah.
I will not live in the better world that I'm trying to bring about.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, he has no real illusions about who he is or what he does.
And I love that.
One of the things I find interesting is that he has this just complete calm because he knows what he's doing and why he's doing it and that it is the necessary thing. And he loses that calm exactly once in the entire movie. And it's not in this scene.
No, it's
later.
I remember.
But there's the one time where he loses his cool and it's kind of fun.
And you know, when it's pointed out to him, he recognizes it and knows what's going on.
This is a very Whedon-esque situation, actually. This is something Joss Whedon has written several other times. And in an episode of Angel in the fifth season, they explain it, where he says, you know, I'm evil, I'm devout, I'm pure. Where the good people are conflicted. They never know if they're really doing good or not.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah.
And Whedon does this several times. You know, the evil people know what they're doing. It's the good people who have to figure it out constantly.
Yeah.
Right.
And one thing I'll point out about Lisa's favorite line from this scene is that, you know, no matter what went down between Inara and Mal and how bad that leaving or how bad things got to where she had to leave, she actually did learn several things from Mal and kept them. And I think that was really cool. And it was very, very subtly done. But, you know, she was not that, you know, she was not that sneaky and conniving at the beginning of Firefly.
No.
No, she wasn't.
To where she'd have flashbang incense.
Not entirely certain that's true.
Mm. Carl did bring up a good point. No matter what went down, she delivered another great line in that same scene. Please, spend an hour with him.
Exactly.
Yes. he will make you mad.
Mm. Yeah.
You either love him or you hate him.
And I find it I find it really entertaining that it's almost exactly an hour more into this movie before you actually see the operative get mad at Mal.
That's true. That is true. I never thought about that. That's awesome.
That's another one of Joss's. Joss is a huge fan of show Easter eggs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He'll hide something in there that's, you know, it's funny if you catch it, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, like when he's writing a musical scene and he realizes that somebody doesn't have a line in this big montage, so he writes a line that says,
I think this line is mostly filler.
Just to give her a line.
But then you have the Council of Serenity after they escape.
Mm-hmm.
And did anybody else – I hate doing this because I actually hated this movie series. But did anybody else get a Fellowship of the Ring vibe in this scene?
No.
No.
You didn't feel that? Okay, with all of them sitting around in the room in the circle and arguing about what they were going to do next, I got a very Fellowship of the Ring vibe.
Well, but they've done that powwow before in the show.
True.
Yeah, exactly.
This is at least the third time they've had a big, you know, meeting in the dining room about how they're going to proceed.
However, I have to admit, this was extremely bold of Jane.
Right yeah.
Here. Oh yeah.
Like,
if you can't do something smart, right?
Oh no, that was way later.
If you can't do something smart, do something right.
No. That's later. Later. He's talking about the. Do you want to run this ship? Yes.
Yes, I do.
But
you can't.
And also the, you know, how many of your people walked out of Serenity Valley?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was just wow. Yeah,
and the answer to that question is either two or three.
Three.
Well, I couldn't remember whether the guy in the message. I couldn't remember if the guy in the message actually had been at Serenity Valley or had just served with them prior in the war.
He's in Serenity Valley. You actually see him briefly in the Battle of Serenity Valley opener to the pilot. He freezes, and he's like he's one of the guys that's huddled up taking cover. But you do actually see him.
Mm.
We count at least three, counting Mal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there was a few more than just them.
No, actually, there isn't. They're the only three people that you see in the Battle of Serenity Valley who are still alive at the end of the Battle of Serenity Valley, you know, a minute and a half later. Like, everybody that's still alive with Mal and Zoe, except for the one kid, are dead in that minute and a half that you see of Serenity Valley.
Yeah. Okay, I wasn't sure if there was some other survivors that
were. There were probably other survivors, but none of them were in Mal's squad.
Right.
Yeah.
Is what it boils down to.
He
lost his entire squad except for Zoe and the one other guy.
Now, see, this argument that was going on right here is when I stopped watching a movie and started actually becoming emotionally involved in the movie. Does that make sense? Even before I'd ever seen Firefly, this was where it grabbed a hold of me.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know what I mean? Hey, guys. This was a particularly long episode that ended up getting broken into two parts. Please join us in part two, where we finish up our roundtable, find out who was playing with their willy, and Rod's rants, plus much more fun. See you there. Hello, Buffers. It's your favorite host. I'm taking a second to let you know you can find us on Facebook and Google+. And have some absolutely naughty conversations with your other buffers. And as always, if you need to talk or flirt with our team of debauchery, you can email us at inthebufffilms@gmail.com. That's 3 F's. Trust me, we love to talk to our fans, especially the good-looking ones. Movies in the Buff was recorded with Creative Commons, Attribution Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 U.S. License.